It was 1970. It was San Diego, and a small group of comic book fans, or maybe you'd call them geeks, decided to organize a little get-together.
First annual Golden State Comic Con gets underway this weekend at the U.S. Grant Hotel. Artist Shel Dorf says he hopes to make this event an annual thing.
Will this be open to the public?
Yes. This is a chance for the amateur fan and the amateur writer to meet with the professionals.
Natalie asked Dorf if he expects a large gathering.
Hoping for about 500.
500 people? It seems like a pretty reasonable number. In fact, only 300 people showed up. Luckily, that didn't disappoint them too much, because since then, those numbers have been tripled, quadrupled by an order of magnitude. It's been more than 40 years, and San Diego Comic-Con International attracts 130,000 attendees each year. Those are just the people who show up in person. The question for people who love comics, love video games, superheroes, and sci-fi is not, are you going? It's, when are you going? Morgan Spurlock joins us now. He took a closer look at these diehard fans, the mother of all geek conventions, in his new movie that hits theaters today. It's called Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. He joins us in studio.
Perfect.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thanks.
All right. The most important question out of the way first. Are you a fan or are you a voyeur?
No, I'm a fan. I've been a fan ever since I was a kid. I grew up reading comics. It was reading Spider-Man and the X-Men and Thor and the Plastic Man. Sadly, my favorite comic book hero as a kid was Plastic Man. That was my favorite.
It's okay.
These were the ones that these are the things that made me want to tell my own stories.
And why did you decide to make a documentary film about it then?
Yeah, I met Stan Lee at the Comic-Con in 2009. I was hired by Fox to do the 20th anniversary special for The Simpsons. And when I was there shooting the special, I was like, there's a bigger story to tell about this place, the people, why they come here, their passion. And I met Stan Lee that night, and he said, let's make a movie about Comic-Con. And I was like, yes, we should, Mr. Lee, yes. Because Stan Lee says make a movie, you make a movie.
If Stan Lee says anything, you take his advice.
That's right.
And you ended up pairing up with Joss Whedon.
It is a time when these people can express themselves in a totally safe environment, and it doesn't matter what they're a fan of. This is really the place where they can lay down their arms and come together and just be like, are we not dope?
Joss Whedon, actually, you say, made it possible for you to get inside Comic-Con.
That's right. Stan and Joss, when they came on to kind of produce the film with me and my producing partner, Jeremy Chelnick, I think that they never would have let us make this movie had those guys not been on board. I think they would have seen it more as being like an expose or we're going to make fun of them. And I think that Stan and Joss gave it geek cred.
Geek cred. That's great.
So yeah.
Plastic Man's okay.
That's right. Exactly.
What is it that they're afraid of in making fun of it? I mean, because some of them don't make fun of it. Some of it's like really cutesy.
Yeah.
What is it that they think people are missing?
Well, I think that, the people who go there, just think a lot of people don't get it. And what they don't want to do is kind of be seen as people who are on the outside. The interesting thing is I showed this film to a lot of friends of mine. Who, like myself, are into sports, and they make fun of me for being into comics and Comic-Con, yet they have no problem taking their shirt off and painting their faces and going to a football game. And I was like, you got to understand, you guys have the same passion. It's just pointed in different directions.
And Comic-Con, the people that you feature in here almost universally say, this is the place where I feel at home. And one of them says, this is my tribe. I think another thing people don't realize is how much money is involved in this. Take a listen to here.
This year, I'm taking out Red Raven number one.
Red Raven number one is probably the rarest Marvel comic. The price that I'm asking on the Red Raven one is
$500,000.
And he's got guys carrying his comics to the convention. They're handcuffed.
That's right.
So beautiful.
To the suitcases.
Yeah.
And he's got $1 million worth of comic books.
More than a million. Yeah, in these books based upon the value that he's put on them. I mean, there's big money in this business. There's things that... And people, things are only worth what people will pay for them. But you will find people who will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for a lot of these collectible comics, toys, you name it. It's amazing.
We're speaking with Morgan Spurlock, a documentary filmmaker, of course. And his new film that hits theaters today is called Comic-Con, Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. When people see the images of somebody dressed up as Superman or dressed up as characters I often don't even recognize. You don't know what that is. Well, it's so obscure.
They make their own kids superheroes
man.
Up. That's right. Exactly.
Exactly.
That's my superhero. I'm Weird Man.
When you asked them about these things, what are they getting out of that?
I think they get a lot of fulfillment. A lot of the people that we speak to, that they get a chance just to – the overwhelming conversation we had with people is how – for so long, we're told that we need to grow up. We need to let go of these childish things, that we need to get rid of our toys. And there is a sense of embracing play into adulthood that they never let go of and that they understand makes them, you know, even more full adults by being able to have this as an extension of their life. And I think there's something really wonderful about recognizing that play matters as a grown-up.
You know, this is a convention that's gone from being obscure and in a sense your film is almost past the point when Comic-Con was just a real fringe operation.
That's right.
How did you find evidence or what did you feel is that piece of the zeitgeist that Comic-Con has become where Hollywood mines it for storylines, for characters, stuff that happens at Comic-Con that's going to burst onto the mainstream?
Yeah, you know, about a dozen years ago, you know, right around the time of the reboot of Batman, I think is when everything changed. And even then, you know, it was still large. It was still like 50,000 people were there. But within that window of the last, you know, 12, 15 years is when it went from 50 to 150. And a lot of that came from kind of the mass marketing of these franchises. You know, they reached a very large audience thanks to, you know, the Batmans of the world, the 300s, the Watchmen, you know, the Dark Knight. You know, these really did have a huge ripple effect that opened up this place to a much larger audience.
And you know what I found kind of fascinating was all of the people that you spoke to said, well, I'm a loner. I'm really different from everybody else. They all made jokes about the guy sitting alone and living in his basement, his parents' basement for the rest of the life. And yet that stereotype didn't seem to fit any of them. Take a listen here to Eric.
I want to draw from the time the sun comes up to the time it goes down. It seems like I'm the oddball in a world of very normal people. But when I dream about like going to a place like Comic-Con, it's got to be like Nirvana. It's got to be the closest thing there is to heaven because other people there are just as much of a nerd as I am.
And yet when you see Eric, he's a military guy. He's got a very loving family. He doesn't seem that odd.
Yeah. It's not Nirvana. It's Nerdvana. So he gets it right. Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for correcting
that.
That's
right. Yeah. But there are people there who are, you know, it's not just the guys in their basement. Like it's people there who have wives, who have kids, who have become adults and have families who, you know, just love this.
That it's live so, in basement apartments.
That's right. Exactly. Underneath their parents' house. Yeah. But it's just an extension of who they are.
In fact, geeks have become cool and hip.
And powerful. Like there was a time as a kid, you know, when we were geeks and I was a geek, where if you read comics or had action figures, you were made fun of. If you wrote computer code and sat in your house and played on your computer, you were a weirdo and a nerd. Now those worlds have collided and those people control everything. You know, those are the people that run all the businesses, that create all the entertainment, and they are billionaires.
Yeah, well, Steve Jobs was the ultimate and cool.
That guy did all right.
All right, we're speaking with Morgan Spurlock.
And filmmaker, not a billionaire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not yet.
He's the maker of Super Size Me, Freakonomics, and his new film is called Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, and it hits theaters today. What question did you most want to get answered making this film?
I think the biggest one is like, why do people go there? What is the attraction? What is it? And I think for me, you know, that was answered continually over the course of the film as you start to hear from so many different people from so many different places all around the world who come there so that they can finally feel like they fit in. You know, I predict, you know, Comic-Con Episode 4 will be the I'm okay, you're okay of the 21st century. There are going to be geeks across the world showing this to their parents. Look, no, Mom, Dad, I'm normal. It's okay.
And in fact, some pretty well-established geeks remembering their roots. Listen to Frank Miller here.
Well, I got my start in comics by bothering Neil Adams' family. And he would tell me that the cause was hopeless, that I was terrible, and to go back to Vermont and pump gas.
So what does somebody like Frank Miller get out of coming to this and seeing these up-and-coming artists? They said something like 80% of them are terrible.
Yeah, it's true. You know, but you're fishing for that 20% because they're just like, you know, Frank Miller was encouraged by Neil Adams, who said, listen, go back and pump gas. And he's like, no, I'm going to keep doing this. You know, sometimes you need to be told no to break through and get a yes.
Can I just ask a really dumb question?
Yeah.
Who's Neil Adams?
Neil Adams, who is probably the godfather of all comic books. Like, this guy is a legend. Yeah, he's a legend in the field.
You just ruined your geek cred.
I blew it.
Geek cred. We're going to have to confiscate the nerd
challenge. Just challenge.
Hockenberry. Morgan Spurlock, director of documentaries, of course. The new one is Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. I'm going to end with the second most important question, which is what is the greatest comic ever?
Oh, the greatest. See, well, it's different for every person. Like for me, like my greatest comic ever would be a Plastic Man number one. Like I would love to have like a near mint condition Plastic Man number one in the original packaging.
And you would pay half a million for it?
Absolutely not.
No. No, but if you have a mint condition Plastic Man Episode 1, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
And would like to donate it to a struggling documentary filmmaker.
That's right.
Morgan Spurlock, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.